Under the Rink, your source for hockey talk without the entitlement. I'm James Tapley-Gralian. I'm joined this week by James O'Brien, new co-host. You may know him from NBC's Pro Hockey Talk blog. We're talking hockey, and more hockey all around the league to set you up for the beginning of the season. Welcome to the rink.
I'm happy to be joined by, especially for this season, a new co-host. Hopefully most of you know of him, know his work. James O'Brien. On Twitter, he goes by Cycle Like Sedins. He used to write for his own blog, Cycle Like the Sedins, and now he's on Pro Hockey Talk. Thanks, James. Thanks for coming in and doing this. Thanks for being the new one of the new co-hosts.
Absolutely. I'm honored to join, and I'm excited for the season to start.
Don't be honored. You'll see how this works out. It's just there's no honor. It's all shame. It's all disgusting, sad shame.
Well, as someone who grew up in the Catholic school system, I know about shame and guilt, so we should be good there.
Good. I have an expert in hockey and in guilt. Nope. That'll be perfect. Yep. We're recording this right before, just actually a couple hours before the puck drop for opening night. Tonight, the Boston Bruins start us off by raising their Stanley Cup banner. And to me, that's how a season should start. You hoist the banner and then go. Just go run towards the cup.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I can't think of a better way of doing it. And I loved the playoffs last season. I was talking with Cornelius of Hockey Blog Adventure last week, mm-hmm. and talking about the Bruins and how much fun I had watching them, and especially watching them in watching all the playoffs in Canada. It's just a different experience when you walk by a bar and sure, maybe there's something else going on, but most of the TVs are hockey, and you can find every game that you want. It's awesome.
Yeah, I need to get out to Canada one of these days. I still haven't had the chance to do that yet.
Ah, it's great.
That's a must.
I love that country. I really do. I tease a few of my Canadian friends a little bit for being from Canada, but still, I'm always, every time I go to Canada, I'm a little excited. And there's something about just getting off the airplane at a Canadian airport, and I just go, wow, I'm finally here. And then, you know, usually it's for work, so I'm working. the adventure kind of fades a little bit. So is there anything that you're looking forward to this hockey season in particular for the 2011-2012 season?
Plenty of things. I mean, with the off season, there are a lot of interesting changes. I think number one, the most changed teams are going to be really interesting to watch. The Philadelphia Flyers, I'm really intrigued to see how their whole setup is going to work. I didn't like that they traded Mike Richards. I think he's a really versatile player that can help them on the penalty kill and offensively. You know, you don't find a lot of guys that can excel so much in both areas like Richards can. I think he's going to be a boon for the Kings. But, you know, seeing what's going to happen with Jagr, seeing what's going to happen with Brizgalov, how all of those pieces are going to fit, you know, if the Briere, you know, emphasizing those young players like Van Riemsdyk, you know, they've got a lot of interesting moving parts that I don't know how it's going to work out, but I have a weird feeling it might. You know, they have a lot of talent still. It would help if Chris Pronger was healthy, but you know, they're kind of the team that, since they were once a contender, they're the most interesting. You know, the Sabres are obviously intriguing too. I think they named Jason Pominville their captain today, which I didn't see coming. I thought it'd be Bonick or Roy. So I was surprised to see it, you know, being Pominville.
I can't remember. I saw them a couple weeks ago in a exhibition game, and I can't remember. Was it Gostad that had the captaincy that night? I can't remember who it was, but they were fast. They look great, and I'm in Buffalo right now, and it seems like everybody that I talk to believes that the Sabres are already Stanley Cup contenders, mainly because the owner spent so much money.
And that's one of the more interesting things is that, you know, I wrote something about it today, actually, at Pro Hockey Talk. You know, for a team that won the Stanley Cup, it's interesting that people are so swayed by the Sabres offseason. And a lot of people, at least from what I've gathered, are picking the Sabres to win that division. And, you know, it's not an unreasonable thing to do, but you'd think the defending champions would get a little more respect. You know, it's surprising. But I guess, you know, people love flashy moves. I'm not sure how much better they make the Sabres, but I do think it makes them better, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. I don't know if it was worth the money. You know, they might wish that they kept some of that money for future spending sprees. You know, they kind of spend it all in one place, you know, mm-hmm. and that could come back to haunt them a bit if someone actually, you know, I mean, Ryan Suter could be a free agent. Shea Weber could be a free agent.
Yeah.
You know, you never know what you can do, but, you know, the cap could go up another $5 million again. You never know what the collective bargaining agreement coming up. But what are your thoughts on the Sabres? Do you think they're going to be a lot better, or do you think they have some holes?
You know, it's hard to tell what they're going to do until we really see them in action with this, with some of the revamp, especially with some of the changes on defense. I mean, with Ehrhoff, with Regier, that's big. But mm-hmm. then you look at some of the, you know, Tyler Myers, obviously. I mean, that's going to be big, and his I guess his cash doesn't kick into the cap until next season, when he becomes a $5.5 million. Wow, yeah, that's huge.
Yeah, that kid's gotten a lot of pressure in a little amount of time. You know, he had the great rookie season. I think they leaned on him too much last season. So mm-hmm. hopefully those new defensemen will help him, you know, get his career back on the right track. Not that he was bad, but, you know, there was certainly a sentiment that he dropped off last season.
Yeah. And, you know, he is gigantic. I don't know if you... Yeah, it's really funny because when we were watching him play, or when we were at the preseason game, every so often he'd be standing right next to Gerbe, and oh my god, it was so funny. It had to be at least two feet. Gerbe. I don't know how tall Gerbe is listed, but whatever it is, it's probably with skates on.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I believe Tyler Ennis is pretty small too. So they've got, you know, two sort of up-and-coming little sprightly forwards on mm-hmm. that team.
And Jordan Leopold, I don't know. I mean, I've seen Jordan Leopold, the good Jordan Leopold. I've seen the bad Jordan Leopold. It'll be a questionable as to whether or not he's actually a factor. And with Ryan Miller, it's always Ryan Miller, and he's very solid. He's not, you know, he'll steal a game for you when you need it. He really will, but whatever shows up in front of him is going to be the question as far as
absolutely.
Defense.
And I mean, he bailed that team out for years when they had some pretty porous defense. So, mm-hmm. you know, giving him a little more support, and maybe Jonas Henroth will be a capable backup. Because last year, I mean, I think we spoke about it on Twitter a little bit with your old, I think, Tom Luongo. Mm-hmm. That, you know, I mean, Patrick Laleem was basically a glorified goalie coach instead of a backup.
Yeah.
So he actually did not get a win, I think, in 7 games played.
Oh, man. So, and, you know, that's, yeah, I think that's kind of what people are expecting from J.S. Chiguer in Colorado and, you know, stuff like that. So that's not necessarily a bad position to have, you know, a backup player that can coach a little bit as well. But still, I kind of feel like we're starting to come to the end of the glory days of the 70-75 game a season goaltender.
Absolutely.
It just doesn't seem to be panning out in the off season. Take a look at, I mean, you could have the stark contrast of Tim Thomas versus Roberto Luongo. I know Tim Thomas played a lot, but even a shaky Tuukka Rask got starts. Maybe even when they could have used a couple games won. Yeah.
From what I remember, both Thomas and Luongo actually got pretty good rest during the season. I think Corey Schneider and Rask hit at least 20 games played.
Schneider did. Wow, I didn't think he had that many.
Yeah, I think that's what hurt Thomas for you know, not getting Hart Trophy consideration. Like of the three Vezina guys, I think Rene was the only guy with like a pretty sincere and serious workload. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the interesting thing in Nashville, they're tough to peg because they have, you know, all three of their big guys are coming up on contracts after the season. Shea Weber, Ryan Suter, and Pekka Rinne. Mm-hmm. So they've got, and with their budget, that they're probably going to need to let one of those guys go. And I pulled some Nashville guys, and it seemed like it's either Suter or Rinne. I personally think, you know, kind of echoing your point about, you know, the end of the glory days for goalies. I feel like goalies are more a dime a dozen than ever. So, like, spending, you know, $5 million plus on one, I feel like it's kind of a big risk when you can, you know, look at the Red Wings model. You know, they've been ever since the lockout, they've been going pretty cheap on their goalies, and that allows them to have, you know, an extra $6 million defenseman here or there, although, you know, Rafalski obviously retired.
Yeah, the big difference there, of course, is that people take a pay cut to go to Detroit because they think that they have a chance. And then, you know, but Nashville hasn't won anything yet. And if they did, well, that'd be, you know, that would be something, but they haven't, and there's nothing to really bank on there.
They're doing pretty well for what they have budget-wise, and you know, it seems like, from what I've gathered, you know, the Nashville market is embracing it about as well as it could. So it's nice to see.
I think one of the things with Nashville and especially Pekka Rinne, and you know, I'd have to ask Buddy Oakes of Smashville on the Glass, of that podcast about it, and his site Preds on the Glass, is that, you know, you've looked at how many, all the goaltenders that have cycled through Nashville over the last several years. And maybe that's where you're starting to really want some stability.
Sure. If you that's could, true.
I would think that giving Rene, you know, $5 million a year and, you know, casting out, you know, casting off Suter would, I think that would be a pretty good trade off to have.
Not awful. Yeah. It's certainly an option. As long as Suter doesn't go to the Red Wings and become, you know, baby Lidstrom, because that would burn. I know that they wouldn't want to see him in the same, you know, playing them six times a year. That, although, you know, with realignment, they might not even be in the same division. That's a whole other discussion.
That's true. We are staring down that realignment thing.
I don't know if I'm ready for such a drastic change. That's from what I've heard, that they're sounding pretty extreme. You know, I've been just getting used to these divisions. I feel like I got a peg on them now, and now they're going to change it. Just very selfish on the league's part. I'm kidding, of course. But so that Nashville situation should be interesting to watch. What are your thoughts on the Florida Panthers? I'm not very positive on them, but do you like their extreme makeover from this offseason?
Their extreme makeover kind of looks like the other half of what happened after the Blackhawks left, or after the Blackhawks won their cup. So many players went to Atlanta, and then it seems like the other half of those players have started going towards, you know, to Florida. But at the very least, it's something. There's something going on there, and that's nice. The only problem I see really is goaltending. I don't understand why Jose Theodore is the master of the 2-year contract at this point.
That guy's got like 9 lives.
He does.
Amazing jobs he's gotten. Yeah. I mean, I guess that Hart Trophy, he just like shows up to contract negotiations with a Hart Trophy or like a, you know, a ribbon you won, or is it, I don't know, do they give something out? Do they get like a mini Hart Trophy? I don't know how that works, but obviously teams are willing to give him a lot of chances. It seemed like he did okay in Minnesota, and actually from what I've seen, the Wild defense was actually not that great last season. It's sort of that thing where you assume with their trap legacy that they're always great on defense, but it seems like that's not the case. Yeah. They're another interesting team with, you know, how they basically traded a huge chunk of their team for a huge chunk of the Sharks, you know, sending Heatley, which is a really interesting gamble. I mean, he could have just had an off year, or he could be on the downswing of, you know, he's getting into his 30s, and that's usually a dangerous time for snipers, but some guys have it, you know, have a feel, and he might have it. You know, he'll definitely give Koivu his first real star teammate. Not to say that there's anything wrong with Martin Havlat, but you know, now they got Setoguchi, and but the Panthers thing for me, and I it's interesting that you brought up the Blackhawks connection, because obviously with Dale Talon, that's what you can't help but think, and it seems like they're headed towards the same kind of bottleneck where they have some expensive, ridiculous contracts, and they're gonna either expire or not expire by the time that prospects are gonna get new contracts, like, you know, Erik Gudbranson, guys like that. You know, the Jovanovski type contracts are still gonna be on their cap. So what I wonder is if they're gonna lose their, you know, they don't have the money to pull a Cristobal UA to Switzerland type deal. You know, they can't bury contract bodies, so that could be right as things turn around for them, they could have cap problems, which is
that's true, but they still have right now they have like $9 million in cap space. Yeah, I think you're right on the defensive side. On the offensive side, it seems like if anything's going to happen, you look at Fleshman, which I thought 4 years was a long time. But if his problems, he had blood clotting problems, of course.
Yeah, blood clot.
Big blood clots. I think it was in his lungs last year.
I think he had a couple spots, but I could be wrong on that.
Last year was in his lungs when he was with the Avalanche, and then before that, he had blood clots in his legs when he was with the Capitals.
Yeah, I think that's right.
The thing with him is, at least if he's, and this is going to sound really callous, this is going to sound kind of cynical, and it doesn't really mean to come off that way, but if it's, when we're talking about the cap, there's sometimes that's just what it is. If he's going to, if something happens to him, he's going on the IR, and there will be cap relief. David Booth, I kind of think of is the same way. Mm-hmm. He's going to have some injury problems, may not. So at least with that, there is the possibility of relief that may come if there are issues. But right now they seem, CapGeek.com, which I use all the time. I love CapGeek. A little plug there because, if you use a site, you should cite it. That's the way it should work.
Oh, absolutely.
But CapGeek shows that they've got 5 forwards under contract for 4 years. But they're pretty good. Good forwards overall. It's not quite star power, but it's not bad. It really isn't.
My only problem is the Jovanovski contract is a 35 plus, mm-hmm. and I mean, I thought he was pretty close to the end of the line already.
Yeah.
Giving him 4 years is kind of scary. And at that price, I was kind of stunned. He's getting paid for 5 years ago, Jovanovski. It's like that's the only problem I have is some of those commitments are a little longer than they had to be. Kopechki, they were giving him way more money than he was going to get anywhere else and giving him more terms. So, but we'll see how it goes. I mean, if nothing else, Kevin Dineen has like a million options to work with, uh-huh. As far as their forwards. They added a lot of different players and it could work out. You never know. It's especially in the East and the Southeast. It's turnover can happen pretty quick if you make the right moves, and maybe Talon knows better than we do.
You brought up Danny Heatley, and something I wanted to kind of talk about a little bit with Heatley. I don't know if during the playoff you saw this moment, but there was a moment when the Sharks had their backs against the walls against the Canucks, which it seemed like they pretty much was the case almost the entire playoffs for them, their coach was behind them, screaming his head off, trying to rally the troops. Hey, come on, blah 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 blah. There was a shot of him of the coach, but then Danny Heatley was right in front of him and had this look on his face that just kind of looked completely tuned out. It looked like, I just don't want to be here right now, or I'm tired of being in this position. And maybe I was reading a lot into it. It's hard in the middle of a game. Maybe he just came off of a shift and he was kind of, tired and all of that. But it just didn't look like he was interested in dealing with that right then.
And he's gotten a lot of criticisms for his attitude. And, with, the Dan Snyder situation, I mean, that's more unfortunate than anything else. I think he's taken enough of a beating for that.
Oh, yeah.
and the way he left Ottawa... Heatley's always going to have sort of a cloud of bad karma around him. Mm-hmm. So, maybe he gets a little extra scrutiny for that kind of stuff. But, it just seemed like he was wearing out his welcome in San Jose, and they got a heck of a, they got a pretty good player in return for him, and some cap relief too.
I remember the beginning of last year, people were wondering, okay, which Danny Heatley is going to show up?
Yep.
And it was a valid question, and now it's even more valid in Minnesota, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're basing a lot of their short term future on that, and mm-hmm. I think he's got a good chance for a good first season. It's almost sort of a Randy Moss situation where. Mm. That honeymoon period where, there's no pouting going on and he's getting along with the quarterback, so to speak. I think that could be good for a season. And then, maybe after that, the Wild have a new coach, Mike Yao.
Mm-hmm.
And, I know he has a Pittsburgh background, just like their GM. I heard he's actually going to bring back the trap, which probably isn't a bad idea if it covers up their defense, even if it, the trap is sort of a scary word, especially in Minnesota. But, Heatley's going to be fascinating to watch. Yeah. I've drafted him in a few fantasy leagues if he fell far enough, because it's interesting to see that the perception is very mixed about him. I mean, some people are pretty high on him still, and other people, you know. I feel like hockey teams, you know, this sort of is going to get into an Alexander Semin argument a little bit too. if you get the right mix, you can have sort of a talented malcontent, you know, running around. I mean, not every team has a, you know, a team full of good guys. You know, sometimes you got to have that polarizing figure. That might segue neatly into the Sean Avery waiver situation.
Actually, I was going to say the Toronto Maple Leafs have made that guy their captain, so.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, you know, with Fanouf, it's, you know, I've seen some Canadian bloggers make some arguments for him improving on defense. But the money they're giving him, it just seems like certain players, like especially defensemen, you know, they peak really quickly and then they get all that adoration, especially in Fanouf's case, because, I mean, he was basically, you know, being molded as like the next Chris Pronger or Scott Stevens, you know, maybe more Pronger because he has that offensive edge. And you almost wonder if a player like that at that young age, with how much of a learning curve there is on defense, if he felt like he had nothing left to learn, you know, like you wonder if maybe he... Because he's, you know, he's known for his cockiness, so.
Yeah.
I don't know about Toronto. They're really hard to peg, especially with their injuries and, you know, that Grabowski line was actually really good last year out of nowhere. And they could be really good again. They have the same guys. But, you know, they're pretty young, so they're in their prime years. But, yeah, you know, that roster doesn't really strike me as a standout one. But, you know, 7th, 8th seed, you can't totally count them out. I'm not sure about committing to Reimer, but I guess they didn't really have a whole lot of other options.
Yeah, no, they're not exactly the deepest team, which is surprising, especially in goal. You'd expect a little more from them. But I think that a lot of people kind of count them out because of past history and recent history, rather than just what their makeup is. It's kind of like Florida or even Tampa Bay until they actually won a cup. It was, these guys are always like this and they're always going to be like this. And you just can't count on that today, especially with as much movement as can happen and with the salary cap, that someone who's worth a little more may not be a big fit in certain places, but may work perfectly somewhere like Toronto.
Absolutely. Clark MacArthur is a good example. Mm. Yeah. He's definitely, you know, he was once, Atlanta walked on his arbitration deal and then he signed with Toronto and he was a great fit. So you really never know. sometimes you feel like you do. Like, I don't know if Alex Ponikarovsky is going to work out in Carolina. But if there's one place he could actually be more than, you know, just an empty jersey, he'd be in Carolina, you know, where they attack constantly. He could be sort of like Entropov in Winnipeg had a good year or two in Atlanta. So,
you know, yeah, you brought up, you mentioned the waivery of Sean Avery. that is just, Sean Avery gets waived by the Rangers. And when he was originally brought in from Dallas Stars on re-entry waivers, that kind of would look like essentially a backroom deal. Hey, if you do this, we'll do that and take him off your hands. Where I'm still trying to figure out why they did that in the first place. Was that just really bad communication between the GM and the coach? Was that Sather and Tortorella not really jibing on what each other thought about this situation?
You know, that's a good question. I mean, Tortorella, I could see Tortorella having sort of that honeymoon phase with certain players. You know, from what I've gathered, he didn't really gel with Avery from the beginning, but, you know, he had a good run in the Rangers. That's what earned him that ridiculous contract he got. And, you know, maybe Sather kind of overpowered Tortorella on that one a little bit. You know, I mean, Sather has his impulses. A lot of times that means the splashy move. At least with this case, he got a 50% discount, which sounded okay at the time. But, you know, you got to wonder about his career at this point. He's 31 years old. if he hasn't been injured, he's been suspended or been a pest. And I mean, if you look at plus minus as far as actions rather than a literal plus minus, you got to look at him as a minus now. You know, it's sort of like Dan Carcillo. Mm-hmm. Like, how many chances are you going to get before people realize you're more of a negative? You poison your own team more than you poison the other teams, you know? And that's a balancing act that a lot of pests, you know. That's why Brad Marchand was so impressive in Boston. He was like the perfect pest last season. You know, it'd be interesting to see if he can back it up again. You know, like, I mean, part of that reentry waiver situation is that I'm not certain there would have been another team that would have taken Avery. It seems like a reasonable gamble, but mm-hmm. you know, now one thing I'm not totally sure about CBA was if he were to go through reentry waivers again, I don't think it would be split up again, would it?
Actually, this was covered by Greg Wojcinski of Puck Daddy. Love Greg, of course. He did say that the original assessment was that it would not be split again. But yeah. then apparently the NHL said that yes, if he were to be picked up on reentry waivers, it would be Dallas paying $2 million, New York Rangers paying $1 million, and his new team paying $1 million. So
three different NHL paychecks.
Yeah, and they're currently saying that he could play again in the NHL. That the path is open. I don't know if that's really true at all or not. They may have even said the same thing about Donald Brashear at the time when they did. Or Wade Redden. Yeah, the Rangers to me, and this is a big conundrum, and you know, I apologize right now to Scotty Hockey, whom I love, and I think he's a great hockey fan. I saw a couple games with him. Love the guy to death, and he might even agree. I don't get how this team can get away with so much bearing of so many bad contracts and so many bad ideas. I just don't get how they are greased. They have the Crisco out. They grease themselves up before they make a deal. It's amazing to me.
Yep. I mean, in my old blog, I joked about, say, they're signing Gabarek to a contract, and it ended up happening. And I was just like, wow, really? Like, you're that predictable. You know, you're going to take another humongous risk. I mean, you know, it kind of flows decently into the biggest free agent move too. I mean, signing Brad Richards to a 9-year deal, and he's either 31 or 32 right now, just coming off concussion problems. Yeah, you know, of all the deals he's done recently, at least Richards is like was legitimate in the position that they're expecting him to be in. It seemed like a lot of times in their history, they hoped that a guy like Chris Drury could go from like a second or third line center to a first line center, and obviously that didn't pan out. And I think you brought up recently that maybe some free agents might have cold feet with the Rangers, but I think when those dollars flow around, they don't think about much else than that. And say what you want about Redden, I'm sure he's kind of miserable in a way, but he's still making $6.5 million a year.
Have you ever been to Hartford? If you haven't been to Hartford, you know, you might not know how miserable he is. No, I I've been to Hartford. I even saw Donald Brashear play there. I think it was like his second game after he got sent down to at the time the Hartford Wolfpack, and now it would be the Connecticut Whale. But yeah, that is just marketing at its finest. God bless him.
Brilliant.
The thing is though that with the Rangers, I wouldn't want to sign with the Rangers at this point if I were signing a contract that were in that much danger, you know, or that high profile. How many, you know, how they had to turn over Gomez as well. It's just been one bad signing. And if you don't fit, and if you don't think that you can fit in with Tortorella, there's no way that I would sign.
I mean, I guess you could sign a no movement clause, which, I know teams are handing no trade clauses out like candy.
You mean like the Calgary Flames?
Yeah, that was the exact team I was going to mention. The crazy thing is, like, the Flames are handing these no trade clauses out to guys that don't have the leverage to get that kind of deal most of the time. It's stunning. It seems like they're repeating a lot of the same mistakes that Daryl Sutter made, you know, with Jay Feaster.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can look at Feaster two ways. You can look at him as the guy that helped build a Stanley Cup champion in Tampa Bay, or the one who dismantled them by giving bad contracts to Dan Boyle, mm-hmm. who they had to trade away, and Brad Richards, who they had to trade away. You know, and even I don't recall. I think they signed LeCavalier's most recent deal after he left. Probably so. So it's not like he's the only guy that's handing out bad deals there. Yeah. But
Calgary Flames have 11 no trade or no movement clauses.
My God.
Including, and these are the two that blow my mind, Rene Bourque has 5-year deal. Alex Tanguay has a 5-year deal, both of them with no trade.
See, I thought, wow, for some reason in my mind, I had 3 years at Tanguay, which sounds reasonable, but 5 years for Tanguay?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, he had last year, they got a great bargain for him. I thought he was going to work out that way in Tampa Bay the year before, but mm-hmm. it didn't work out. But man, that's, you know, you're giving these guys crazy security, and that team's just so old. And, you know, that I kind of agree with trading Robin Reagair in a way, because mm-hmm. it seems like he's on a slight decline for his paycheck. But,
yeah.
you know, then they turn around and they give bad contracts out, and it's like, so you basically open up space to make the same mistakes. It's dizzying. I picked them to finish ninth place this year because I actually only have the Canucks of the Northwest making the playoffs again,
mm-hmm.
which feels ridiculous. You know, like that. You know, you're going 3-4 teams in the other divisions, but the Northwest just looks bad. You know, actually, the Colorado Avalanche are kind of the wild card in my mind. You know, they could go either way. I just feel like there's too many ifs with Colorado to pick them as a playoff team right now. But mm-hmm. I'd love to see them because they actually play an attacking style. You know,
I've seen everywhere from John Buchegras saying that they were going to make the playoffs this year for the mm-hmm. Avalanche versus nobody on Puck Daddy picked them to make the playoffs. And agree with you that the only team that in the Northwest that's going to make it is the Vancouver Canucks. Yeah. You're right. They are a total wild card right now. It's all going to depend on how well that defense gels, mm-hmm. especially as much change as there's been, and whether or not the two goaltenders are going to be able to stand up.
Yeah, the problem with Varlamov is injuries. I think he's a talented goalie, mm-hmm. but I'd have to look up his stats later on, but you know, he hasn't had many starts in any of his seasons, so that's a little worrisome.
The question for me with his injury, though, was that because he pulled his groin, mm-hmm. he was out for a little while, but was the question that he wasn't able to play, or was it that Neuve was just doing that well in Washington and had basically earned the job?
And it seemed like they trusted him, you know, and mm-hmm. I don't think he has the same ceiling. You know, a lot of people were saying that Varlamov was the third best goalie in Washington, and I think that's a little bit of a knee-jerk reaction when Holtby played six games.
Yeah, and you remember that playoff series against the Pittsburgh Penguins,
mm-hmm.
and that was a hell of a performance by Varlamov.
Oh, he was fantastic.
Yeah,
I mean, it seemed like they exploited him a little bit as the series went on, but you know, that could be just that the Penguins are a talented team, obviously. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he had a smash success, and I don't think you can totally ignore that, you know. Especially since, like, I looked at his numbers, and they're always very good. Like, his record wasn't that great last year, but he had a great save percentage, and that's sort of my, you know, it's not the greatest barometer, but I think it usually takes some of the team element out of the equation, so you can just look at the goalie as is. Like, that's why I'm a little more optimistic about the Blues, is that Halak actually had a pretty solid year, not a great year last year, but you know, it felt like he had a flop last year, and that wasn't the case unless you expected him to be playoff Halak all year long.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But yeah, well,
we've kind of danced around some of these teams here that we're mm-hmm. having fun with. But what any predictions that, I mean, I know that you did a big post on Pro Hockey Talk about your predictions. Mm-hmm. And I don't usually do very many predictions. There's just so much, but any predictions that you'd like to discuss that you want to throw out there?
Sure. I guess we could start at the top with the Stanley Cup Finals. I thought I went bold by picking the Capitals over the Kings, but then Joe did the same thing, which is pretty funny. You know, we don't talk about our predictions beforehand, so it's just randomly. you know, as far as the West goes, I feel really strongly about the Sharks and really strongly about the Kings, but I feel like the Kings have a better playoff friendly roster. You know, I mean, obviously Richards is going to be a nice warrior for them to have, you know, could grind out some wins for them. You know, it gives them versatility to be that team that they've been before, which is kind of a grind them out defensive team, but it also gives the, you know, it opens up a lot of space for Kopitar, you know, who just about everyone, like at least experts, seem like that, you know, a lot of people are talking about a 100-point season for Kopitar. I'm not sure if he has the wingers to really support that. I think 85 to 90 is perfectly reasonable, which is fantastic in its own right. But as far as the Capitals and the Kings, you know, that Thomas Vokoun signing is gigantic. I mean, I think a lot of people are sleeping on how good Vokoun's been in some. I mean, he put up great numbers in Florida, which is saying a lot. You know, they didn't have much last season, or really since he's been there. I mean, I guess there's the possibility that he could get. You know, he's getting a little older. You know, I think he's 36. So, you know, some goalies, you know, they age like fine wine. You know, you look at Hasek; he went a long time. But that's the only thing I could see, either the pressure or the capital system or his age. But, you know, overall, I think he makes the Capitals a more complete team than they've ever been before. I mean, even their defense looks pretty good if you break it down. You know, obviously everyone beats up on Mike Green, and I understand why. I think that they could use him to his strengths a little bit more now that they have Roman Hamrlick. Dennis Wiedemann's kind of interesting there. I think he's pretty error-prone. I've heard he's gotten a little better about that, but he's sort of a mini Green. So it gives them a, you know, and obviously the John Carlson, Carl Alsner duo will probably get better again next season. So, you know, they've got a really promising defense. They added some, they kind of overpaid a little bit, but they added Troy Brouwer and Joel Ward to make them more of a, you know, they got those wingers that can complement Mike Knuble and make them tough too, not just a, you know, a finesse scoring team.
Yeah.
Their only real hole to me is like they could use a better second line center. Like I like Brooks Like, but I like him as a third line center more than a second line center.
They're paying him like a second line center, at least on that team. I mean, that's
This
is kind of this team has kind of the same problem that you see with Pittsburgh. And you know, I guess it's a good problem to have, but that they're so lopsided in how high they're paying a few people that then they have to have a lot of very low paid people after that.
And, absolutely.
Yeah, you know, last year for me, the big problem with the Capitals really was the defense. There's you're pretty much locked into the forwards that you have. You're pretty much you're locked into your top two lines. So but they did go out and change up the defense quite a bit. I don't know about Wiedemann though. I've never been sold on Wiedemann. Maybe it's
Me neither.
Maybe it's there's that I always talk about that video of him that shootout goal, quote unquote, where he got the crazy legs, and he skated in, he tried to make a move, caught a toe pick, and his legs went right out from under him.
I guess that happens. I mean, Stamkos has one of those.
Oh God, yeah. But maybe it just stuck. Maybe that's just me. But man, that was.
I'm not totally sold on him either. Yeah. But I don't think they're gonna use him too heavily with the guys that they have now. He might be a bottom pairing guy. I mean, his health is a concern too. He had a pretty scary leg injury toward the end of last year. The interesting thing about the Capitals too, and I've made this point a few times, is that they can change everything after the season. And that's part of the reason I made like a pro Bruce Boudreau argument earlier this summer, is that why not give it one more kick, you know? Because Green, Wiedemann, Knuble, Vokoun, and a few other guys are their contracts are Semin. You know, Semin and Green, the two guys that everyone really loved to beat up on, are their contracts are expiring. So if it fails, they could fire Boudreau, let those guys walk, totally revamp, you know, like sort of the support players around Backstrom and Ovechkin. And you know, they obviously they have that Colorado pick coming up. Who knows what that's going
to
be?
Yeah, no, so I think that the GM said that he expects it to be a lottery pick. I'm hoping well not. We'll see. But
that would hurt. That would hurt pretty bad. Because I mean, you could look at it. You know, if Colorado does fall, you know, all they needed was that one extra prospect, probably. So that could look at that as a pretty significant historical moment, especially if the Capitals win the Cup, because then they could, you know, theoretically win the Cup and add a lottery pick. It's almost like Boston getting Tyler Seguin, only, you know, there might be a better guy than Seguin in the draft. I've heard good things about the 2012 draft, but that's not my area of expertise.
Yeah, and that's still a ways away. You never know. I mean, I was thinking about Angelo Esposito, and he was supposed to go, what, top five, and what'd he fall to, like almost 20th, I think? Yeah. That was ugly. If it is I did a post on Jerseys and Hockey Love not that long ago about the Avalanche and their and how they've drafted goalies and how it's worked out. The most successful goalie that the Avalanche have drafted has been Brett Johnson, and he never played a single game for them. Other than that, it was Budaj. It was David Abisher, who just got signed to an AHL contract. With the Jets slash St. John Ice Caps.
I'm not sure. Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah, and then before that, in the most successful would have probably been Tim Thomas was originally drafted by the Quebec Nordiques.
I believe in the ninth round. If I remember,
was it ninth round? Man,
yeah, something ridiculous like that. I mean, it's like, how do you not get drafted in those? Like, how did Martin and St. Louis not get drafted? Because I think they came out the same year and he was undrafted. Like, okay, you're in the ninth round and you don't want to take a chance on a guy just because he's small? Like, how? I mean, did no one learn anything from Theo Fleury? Those two guys, like, are a classic example of why the NHL is sort of a fearful league in some ways, or at least it was. Thomas, unorthodox, so much so that they didn't give him a chance until he hit his 30s. Like, who knows what he could be now? I mean, maybe that made him a better goalie to have to test himself, you know, over and over again. And it made him so driven. You know, he obviously, I think and going back to the Stanley Cup finals, you know, a lot of people beat up on Luongo, I think a little too much, but I'll say this much. If you want to be like sort of classic sports writer about it, the big difference between Luongo and Thomas that I noticed is that when Thomas let up a goal, especially a bad one, he'd become furious, and it, like, a lot of times, it, you know, you're not getting another puck past him. I remember Tampa Bay scored an early goal against him in a series, in one of those games in the series, and he didn't allow another goal despite, I think, 30 chances or 30 shots after that. It was like the first shot of the game he allowed it, and then he was like, no, I'm not letting another goal get past me. With Luongo, it almost seems like he sulks, like he gets fazed by that, you know, that bad goal or just by that early goal, and then it fell apart, you know, horrifying.
It's almost like he looks to the heavens and says, why me? Why does this happen to me? Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. And, you know, it's with that, we're kind of back to talking to the Avalanche a little bit, which, you know, I try not to do as much on this because I do have another podcast called the Avs Hockey Podcast. Sure.
They're pretty fascinating this offseason, though. So I'm with you.
That, you know, who knows if the Avalanche, one of their biggest problems, I mean, was depth and goaltending. They have none. So
yeah,
if a first round pick that you don't know whether or not it's going to work out at all or not is what you need to spend right now to get a goaltender, whatever, go for it. Might as well. There's going to be other people there. You know, you never know who's going to work out, who's not going to work out. So if you get something at least slightly guaranteed, even though, you know, he is not a guarantee, you know, Varlamov is not a guarantee by any stretch right now,
but he's got talent. And I think at least judging from what I've seen from those teams over the years, you know, I really liked Craig Anderson, but that situation just really fell apart. I'm sure you could elaborate on that, but you know, you need a goalie that's got some athleticism with how many odd man rushes. At least if they attack as much as they did last year, they might pull it back a little bit. But Varlamov's got that lateral mobility and, you know, that sort of flair to make saves. It's just, you know, like, if they're going to hang him out to dry too much, it might not really matter. But, you know, I think he's a good fit for them. The contract itself they signed into was pretty reasonable. I think it was like 2.5 a year or something like that. That's not bad.
No.
If he works out, it'd be great.
The Avalanche almost had to overspend just to get to the cap with, they're the lowest payroll teams right now in the league, and it didn't really work out last year. I don't know why they're thinking it's necessarily going to work out this year, but I know that they're also thinking about saving money for when people like Matt Duchene, Ryan O'Reilly, yeah. when it's time for them to get paid.
Yeah, Duchene's going to be pricey. It sounds like he wants John Tavares type money, which seems reasonable because he's got like almost the same exact numbers.
Yeah.
I might actually rather have Duchene if I'm building a team. I'm kind of seduced by his speed though. He's got some wheels on him for sure.
He settled down a lot. His first season, he looked a lot like at least first half of his first season, he looked a lot like that junior player that doesn't have anyone to play with and tries to split the defense all the time.
Yeah.
It never worked. And he kind of learned his lesson, but and again, you know, you never know what another year of seasoning done for him, for Tavares, for Stamkos, for instance. You know, those are great guys that stepped immediately into the NHL and didn't have that transition step. And you just kind of wonder, wow, what would they be like if they hadn't?
Yeah. You know, I mean, I think some guys need that development time and haven't gotten it. You know, you can make an argument for Seguin. I know he had that great playoff run. Although, correct me if I'm wrong, I think you could play in the playoffs and still keep your first entry-level year. I'm pretty sure that's the way it goes.
I'm not sure. I don't remember how it is.
It felt like they kind of wasted it with Seguin, although, you know, maybe you could say jersey sales and just buzz helped. But, I mean, you know, you got a division title-winning team.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you really need that. It felt like they had the luxury to wait on that while other teams, you can kind of understand Edmonton, you know, playing Taylor Hall right away. I don't know about Nugent Hopkins, though. You know, like, he seems, I've heard a lot of small talk, and now he's, like, added too much weight. It's a tough call. You kind of just have to give teams the benefit of the doubt with their, you know, junior / minors decisions with their prospects.
Oh, absolutely.
What do you think about is it pronounced Landeskog?
I believe it's Landeskog. How do you actually there was a great Puck Daddy post. Somebody had put pronunciations up on, and half of them were wrong. They were just awful.
That's awesome.
Landeskog is. I don't know enough about him. I did not get to go to training camp this year, and the people who did go to training camp, they seemed to be big on him. They seemed to think that he was pretty impressive. It's all going to matter once you stick him in front of a real game and real defensemen, and then you're going to see what's going to happen. I hear he's real excited. I guess he was another one of those that was that kind of grew up an Avalanche Sakic fan, and that never hurts. You know, they really want to impress and do the team proud. And I'm just going to have to wait and see because I just don't know enough about the guy.
It's a big mystery group, the rookies this year, anyway.
Yeah. So I'm looking at the Eastern Conference and last year's standings, and it looks almost like it could go almost exactly the same as it did last year.
I think I might have gone 8-for-8 with playoff teams.
I think you did.
In both conferences, I think the only substitution I made. No, I might be wrong. I'm double checking real quick. I think I just switched St. Louis and Phoenix. I'm very low on Phoenix. I think I put them like second to last in the West. Because, a lot of people have made a big deal about, Dave Tippett's system, and he's certainly a great coach.
Mm-hmm.
But they allowed the third most shots per game last year. And I know shots aren't everything. You know, maybe those were a lot of perimeter shots. But I think that impresses upon how great Brizgalov was and how much they leaned on him. And I'm not a Mike Smith hater, but I don't think he can be anywhere near as good as Brizgalov. So, in the East, I think it's going to stay stable. I mean, there's a couple teams, Toronto, I'm not sure about. Carolina, I'm not too high on, New Jersey is kind of a mystery, too, though. I mean, is it just one off year for them, or are they circling the drain? I mean, losing Zajac for a couple months, that's going to hurt a lot. They're very top heavy.
New Jersey is kind of the conundrum. I think that's we're probably witnessing close to the end of Marty Brodeur's career.
And, for sure.
Yeah, and it's questionable as to what they have behind that. Is there anybody who's ready to take up the mantle or even just be a number one goalie there? They may have to actually wind up buying one at some point.
I think they'll probably buy one. At least they can move his paycheck to someone else's bank account, basically. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then there's always the Kovalchuk question. That'll that's always going to be the conundrum, whether or not Kovalchuk's going to show up or if he's going to be like, you know, the first half of last year.
I mean, it seems weird that they made that Kovalchuk gamble when they didn't have Parise's situation straightened out. And it's, I think it's coming back to haunt them. I think Kovalchuk will be a little more consistent this year. He had a really bad start to last year. And then he's like, it's almost like he Jacques Lemaire came in and he's like, oh, okay, well, I'll listen to a good coach. and is he going to feel that way about Peter DeBoer or however you pronounce his name? I don't know. You know, I never really got a bead on him in Florida. It seemed like, I mean, you almost can't really fault a coach for what they do in Florida, at least, you know, in the early stages.
In the past, well, it's, you know, I don't know. It's Kovalchuk is going to be one of those conundrums. I don't think he was worth the money.
No.
Obviously, the fans don't think he was worth the money. Yeah, there's, with all the ugliness that's happening in, you know, in New Jersey right now. And what was it? The one of the co-owners actually paid $25 million to get rid of his stake.
That just shows you how much debt there is. If you're, he might have gotten off lightly. If you know, I mean, from what I hear, the Nets being locked out is going to be really rough on the Prudential Center, which is, you know, the Devils have a serious stake in. I think their company is tied to the Prudential Center.
And then on top of that, you add in that. Yeah, the big contract for Kovalchuk right there is like we're spending how much? That's gotta scare creditors. I would be scared.
Oh, for sure. And you know, I mean, that's an expensive team that, you know, I don't know. I mean, like, I don't know the real dynamics of, you know, it's mostly hearsay that even when the Devils were doing really well, they weren't necessarily embraced as much as a, you know, a borderline dynasty team would in New Jersey. You know, they had their, obviously, every team has their pocket of fans, but maybe the trap style just didn't win a lot of the casuals over in the market. You know, I mean, there's like a million entertainment choices in that, you know, tri-state area, so to speak. So, I mean, you know, it's like building that new big arena in kind of a weird spot. I mean, I don't want to disparage Newark and get, you know, Barry Melrose, you know. But I've been there a few times. I grew up in New Jersey, and I don't know if I'd want to, like, you know, go in the subway or, you know, take a bus to a Devils game and then wander the streets of Newark at midnight after a game. So
have you ever been to the old Continental Airlines Arena?
Oh, for sure. It was kind of a dump. But it
was a big dump. It was a huge dump. And that, you know, I saw 2003 game 7 of the Stanley Cup Finals. I saw them hand out the cup there, and the fans were fun. They were great, but boy, it really was a dump. And that's not, no offense, because it's not like the fans built that place, but now they have a great big arena and nobody's going to the games there either. It's, boy, it was a gamble, but kind of like in Phoenix, would you rather have an arena in Glendale or what's the other, Scottsdale?
Really? I think it might be Scottsdale. Yeah. You know, the thing is with that, it's like, why would you have two teams, you know, NBA, NHL, in different arenas in the same general area? Like that, I don't know how that happened. Maybe the city of Glendale just made a great bid and it was worth it to them at the time. But
fans that I talked to and who saw the Coyotes at the old arena where the Suns play said that the facilities just were not friendly to ice hockey. Just wasn't an ice hockey arena. And the problem with Glendale, because I've been to a couple of Coyotes games out there, there isn't anything around other than like bars. And then you get on the highway and you drive. You're so far out, and all it is basically is an excuse to go drinking and driving.
Yeah.
It just doesn't seem like a good idea. And there's a little bit of light rail out there, but it's pretty sad.
Yeah.
So aside from the fact that that the team has not done well, and it's so far out there, and it lives in the shadow of the football stadium. After that, what do you do when you get out of the game? There's just a bunch of bars like your Coyote Uglies and, you know, things like you'd find in downtown Disney. It's not a good environment for people to drive to, and not a good environment for a family-friendly area, that's for sure.
And you know what? For a long time, I thought they were bound to move, but it's dragged on so long at this point, and the NHL has shown such a willingness to lose money on it that offset by all the money they've been making in other areas, which has to make owners pretty upset, you know, that they're footing the bill for a little, you know, a losing proposition. Yeah, the city of Glendale needs the Coyotes, even though they're going to lose either way. From everything I've gathered, they're going to lose less if the Coyotes stay, which is kind of a sad lose-lose situation. Mm-hmm. But you wonder if that's worth it for the NHL. Like, you put a team, you know, in a bigger market or a more hockey-hungry market, you know, you get another big revenue stream to throw into the big, you know, big bucket for the NHL rather than losing 25, 32 million a year, whatever it might be.
Yeah.
So it's a messy situation, but I think just the fact that they've gone to such extremes to keep them there, jump through so many hoops, I think it's going to work itself out just because it has to. But you never know. I mean, it's just, it's a really sad situation. It's one of the worst. You know, the problem is the NHL has more mini Phoenixes than you might think. You know, I mean, Columbus seems like they're in a little trouble too. Mm-hmm. And I don't really like their off-season spending. You know, I understand the logic of it, but, you know, James Wisniewski, for one thing, he's going to miss the first 8 games of the season. But, I mean, you know, you got two guys like Jeff Carter and Wisniewski that are, you know, can bring some offense, but, you know, they're typically, they lose a lot, you know, in being one-dimensional play. Well, maybe Wisniewski might not be one-dimensional, but Carter certainly is. I mean, he's not a great playmaker. He's mainly, you know, a goal scorer, and that's really all he does. So if you keep him off the scoreboard, he's kind of useless. So, you know, Columbus is in trouble. Phoenix is in trouble. There's quite a few situations that are a little trouble. I'm kind of surprised we haven't heard more about Florida since they haven't been in the playoffs in a decade. That's stunning.
Well, you'd actually have to have some fans there to see them, to actually hear about them and know.
True.
There was the night that I went to the Buffalo Sabres preseason game, mm-hmm. Wisniewski sent a picture of the crowd from Toronto where he was, and it was, I would say, 75-80% full. I sent a picture from the Sabres game, which was almost completely sold out. I think it was a sellout for a preseason game. That's how excited people are right now. Then I saw a picture from the Florida Panthers game. And I think that the people who did not show up to Buffalo were the amount of people that did show up in Florida. It was really ugly.
They've got kind of a crazy owner. Mm-hmm. You know, he's got a lot of Michael Yorkman, I think is his name. He's got a lot of crazy. He's pushing the advertisements on jerseys type angle, you know, which is a little scary. You know, you get like a desperate owner that wants to make money whatever way he can. Like, he had some weird deal with Lexus to get them some money, and you can't blame him, but it's like, you know, you have to wonder if Florida is an endangered species at some point. Like, how are they just willing to lose money? Like, I haven't heard much, but maybe you're right. It's just like a lack of coverage of their problems. But yeah, that's a troubling situation with those teams.
You mentioned a suspension, so I think we might as well bring up Brendan Shanahan and his kind of the new, the Shanahammer that he's wielding right now. Lot of suspensions in the preseason. But it was a pretty significant rule change that he's having to enforce with headshots. Mm-hmm. Almost, it's not quite as bad as, let's say, juniors, which, you know, I'm saying as bad as, but it's, I should say, as severe as, because in juniors, you get 2 minutes for head checking, basically for head contact. Mm-hmm. And in juniors, that makes a lot of sense. There's, you know, you don't want these guys who are 16, 17, 18, starting their round of concussions. So, but now we've already had a bunch of suspensions. The biggest one, of course, 8 regular season games for head checking. It was huge.
It was a pretty dirty hit.
Yeah.
You know, after the whistle.
And what do you think? I mean, what's your take on all of this?
Well, I think I kind of echo a lot of people's thoughts in that the transparency is the one thing that reasonable people said about Colin Campbell, like that it didn't seem like there was any rhyme or reason to the suspensions. It seemed very arbitrary. Like, you can kind of let the Matt Cook thing slide, I guess, because it sort of was like a loophole hit. You know how that goes. But, you know, as far as Shanahan, I like the clarity. I like the videos, you know, where he explains in detail why he's making the decisions. And I actually didn't see the video where he explained why a suspension didn't happen, but I think it's a very savvy way of acknowledging that that's one of the biggest, you know, topics of internet discussion is those suspension hits. I mean, you know, we discussed them ad nauseum on the site last year. I honestly got tired of talking about that stuff, especially since it's just discouraging to see that, you know, the sport is in trouble in that way. But I like the clarity. I wonder if he's going to keep up those harsh penalties during the season, or if he's, you know, kind of setting a tone, you know, maybe like stomping around for a little while and then it'll settle after some time. You know, the one thing, Wisniewski's, you know, a pretty prominent player. They certainly paycheck wise. But the common, you know, the common question is, are they going to have the same standard for star players? You know, is Malkin going to get away with a bad hit against the boards like he did, you know, years ago? And, you know, are the stars in big games going to get suspended when they should? And that's a tough thing for the league to do. You know, you're basically, you know, you're going to hurt the quality of your games, but you're going to make the sport more fair by punishing those stars. You know, that's going to be an interesting thing to do. And while, you know, again, he did punish an everyday player, a significant player for Columbus, he's not a star by any means. So it'd be interesting to see when the first star lays the first ugly hit, what they're going to do.
Yeah. The interesting one I thought was Brad Boyes when he got suspended for just two preseason games. The one thing that I heard about that, rather than it just, what's the point? The point was that it now makes him a repeat offender if he does it again.
Exactly.
And then they can bring the hammer a little harder that next time.
And I mean, the thing that's repeat offender makes a lot of sense. I agree with it. You know, the speed of the game, you can't always assume that a hit is as malicious as it looks in slow motion. But the problem is, like, you know, like you look back at that Ovechkin situation, you know, when he hit Brian Campbell in 2009-10, you know, that late in there's an NBC game. You get the feeling he got suspended because it was such a prominent situation. But the thing is, like, a lot of guys will almost get suspended but won't be repeat offenders. So you'll see an explanation, at least in the Campbell days, like, well, he's never had a prior offense. But really, you know, like you look at Ovechkin, I'm not trying to, you know, single him out. It's just something that comes to mind because he sort of got arbitrarily punished in the past. Is that, you know, he had like a knee-to-knee on Gonchar and a few other questionable hits. But since he never got suspended, he wasn't a repeat offender. So I doubt Shanahan will consider anyone that doesn't get a punishment, you know, a repeat offender. But, you know, that's like, there's a couple gray area things that'll be interesting to see what he does. But overall,
yeah, but there's always going to be a gray area with stuff like that. At least you're right. We are getting the explanation, but there will be gray areas.
Yeah. And, you know, there's certain hits that you wonder, like, trying to think of it. There was a controversial hit. I think it was someone hit Paul Gosted. I'm not sure if that's the right pronunciation. But I think it was a Toronto player caught him up high or from behind. And the Sabres were upset that there were, A, wasn't even an explanation, and B, there wasn't a suspension. So, I mean, the ultimate thing is that they got to make sure that the players know what's going on, you know. I think they're doing a better job of that. You know, they got videos of explanations, videos of the rule changes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think the most important thing is that they've added they've taken a lot of the guesswork out of it for officials. Like, you know, you don't have to worry about it being a blindside or lateral hit when it's a hit to the head. A hit to the head is a hit to the head.
Yeah.
And that's rough on players, you know, because, again, people underestimate the speed. I mean, you only have so much body control, and you can only factor in the other player's movement so easily. You look at, Brendan Smith on Ben Smith, a suspension, the Red Wings prospect on a Chicago guy. It was a bad hit, but, you know, he was playing defense, you know? I mean, it's hard to really pick on him too much, and I understand why they suspended him. But that's an example of just how, you know, you're going to have to live with a certain amount of ugly hits in the game just because it's, you know, you don't want to take you don't want to defang hockey to where it's not a physical sport anymore. That's part of the reason people love the game is it's this, you know, this sort of this you know, elegant mixture of, you know, great skill, world-class speed, and extreme violence. You know, mm-hmm. I think that makes it. So you got to find the right balance, and I think Shanahan's doing a pretty good job. You know, I'm not an expert on those kind of hits. I was never a referee at any point. You know, but what do you think? Do you like the direction he's going? Do you think he's being fair or too light, or too harsh with penalties?
No, I think it's a little harsh, but at the same time, it's a learning curve. It's a learning curve yep. for him as much as it is for the players. At the very least, we've got a guy who played recently enough that he saw the speed increase in the game and mm-hmm. understands what the players are thinking and what they're feeling on the ice when it's happening. Campbell was so far removed from any playing situation that it was absolutely ridiculous to ask him to say what a player was thinking. Now it's yep. the game has changed so much. The game has changed so much just since the lockout itself.
Sure. Absolutely.
So I'm happy that I'm very happy that he's putting out the videos, even though there's still a lot of people who, you know, will complain about his reasoning, even though, sure. you know, he can say, this is why I did this. There'll still be complaints because, well,
sure.
the internet is the internet. God bless
it. Oh, yeah.
But still, you know, I think it's better. I think it's a lot better. And I think at least for now, it's going to bring a lot more credibility.
Sure.
I wouldn't mind seeing that office be kind of like an ombudsman for like ESPN or something, like PBS has one where you change it every 3 years and you say, okay, now let's bring in somebody else. And you just up you up the quality of it, but at the same time you up its reputation and people will believe in it a little more.
So. Keeping it fresh. I mean that, you know, that's why I think it was kind of harsh to beat up Campbell too much, even though everyone did.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, I mean, he was at that post for a long time, and you know, again, he's a long timer, a lifetimer, I should say.
Yeah. It was probably too long.
Oh, for sure. I think so. And yeah. I agree. I like that idea. Like, you know, maybe 3 to 5 years, whatever it is, you know, you don't want to arbitrarily take someone out if they're doing a good job, but you know, keeping that perspective, like you said, especially, you know, if the rules change again a little bit, which I don't think they will. Now, one thing I haven't heard from you, just kind of on the rule issue, I think we can get to something, you know, a little more pertinent in a second, but are you a big anti-shootout guy, or do you kind of like them? Well, what's your stance on shootouts?
I don't like the current format of the shootout. I would mm-hmm. like to see it go five deep like most minor leagues do. I don't like that it's individual versus individual rather than a team sport.
Sure.
But the one thing that the NHL has... The big deal is that it's everywhere. It's the NHL was one of the last places where the shootout didn't exist, and
that's true.
It happens in international hockey. I don't know how it works in the KHL. I don't know how it works in the German Elite League, things like that. But mm-hmm. every minor league has it in the U.S. in North America. So I think that it was kind of the way that it had to go. I don't like the charity point, though. I do.
Yeah.
I did like the way that ties worked out in that. Okay, you split the points and that's it. You didn't win, so you don't get anything special. I wouldn't mind seeing a 3-point system, but I don't think it'll ever happen.
Yeah, I think a 3-point system would be great for hardcore fans, and you know, hardcore fans hate the shootout because you know, I think anything that gives you incentive to pull back your defense and not even try to win.
Yeah.
In an ideal situation would be outlawed, but you know, I understand, you know, practically speaking, I made an argument that teams should get nothing unless they win. That would be really fun, but it would never happen. No one would ever want to go home knowing that no points were allotted. But in my dream world, you know, you get a tie, nothing. You lose, nothing. You win, you win, you know, kind of like, you know, most other sports.
Yeah.
Never happen, but it would be really fun to watch because teams would always try to win.
And, yeah, absolutely.
That's the problem I have with the shootout is that you can sit back in overtime or even before overtime and just hold out for that coin flip of a shootout, you know? And,
mm-hmm.
But
you get a goalie with an off night or Ron Wilson decides to put in the backup or, you know, The other thing was the 3-on-3 that they tried, and I am hugely, just thinking about it, I don't like it at all. They talk about, oh, it's going to open up, there's even more ice, and it's going to open things up even more.
Yeah.
But all I can see is a coach saying, well, I don't want to get scored on, so it's going to be 2 defensemen and 1 forward all yep. the time. And all you're going to have are shots from the point and neutral zone passing, and that's about all that there's going to be as far as I can see. I could be wrong, but
I don't even know how much I like 4-on-4. I don't like when sports change rules and how the game's played in different situations, like mm-hmm. overtime. Thankfully, it's not that way in the playoffs.
Yeah,
but you know, I'd say make it natural 5-on-5 all the time until the shoot. But you know, with the shootout, it's the basic thing. It's a crowd pleaser. I think even hardcore fans, when they're at games, you know, if they're just going to get a tie, I think there's a part of them that are, you know, a little excited. They get a little bonus hockey, even if it's fake hockey at the end.
Well, they make a great point. It's almost the same thing as fighting, in that you never, you know, they say, oh, you never see somebody sitting down for a fight.
Yeah.
You know, or people don't stream out for a fight, except that, you know, in it's not that people are necessarily always excited about the shootout. It's that there's still more at stake. That's what the real problem is.
And there's no tie. You know, people hate, it's not American, you know, so to speak, to want a tie. That's just, you know, no one wants to kiss their sisters, all that good stuff.
Well, I can't speak for you, but I didn't mind the tie.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to say anything about kissing sisters because, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I thought that's what you're talking about.
I know. Like, that's kind of where
I know I'm in
I
South,
wanted you to think that.
Yeah. Texas is pretty full.
And I do kind of want to talk about fighting next time. I don't want to. I know that there's, you know, there's the debate cropped up quite a bit this off season, and sure. I know that a lot of ink was spilled about it, but my honest belief is that people are probably going to change how they feel a little bit once the season has started and once we're back into games. And it's very easy in the off season to say one thing and then not keep it in the regular season. So I kind of want to talk about fighting maybe next time.
Yeah. I mean, if I were to, I'll save my more, you know, in-depth stuff, because I do have certainly some points about that.
Okay.
But ultimately, you know, it might get phased out in some way a little bit, but I think it should be a part of the game. It's not why I watch hockey, though. I don't feel empty if there's no fighting in a game. The playoffs are the best time of year, and there's almost no fights. And if there is one, you know, it's usually a meaningful one, like the Cavalier Ginla. You know, I mean, that was... I think that's one fight that people look back on and it's like, that's two guys that really cared at the time. And, you know, Le Cavalier especially, I mean, he almost never fights, and fighting a guy, even a star like Ginla, was an impressive moment, you know, like sort of in that series. But I do remember, I can't remember his name off the Edmonton Taylor. Is it Faden or Faden?
I don't
know. But he... during sort of a standard icing touch up, Eric Nystrom reached for the puck, and where you'll get a debate is, you know, if he was being malicious, but his stick got caught in Faden's skates, and he crashed into the boards and broke his leg, more or less. Mm-hmm. He's out for the season. And that brought up icing rules again, you know, with the last big time was Curtis Foster almost losing his career because of an injury.
Yeah, breaking his femur, just like this.
Actually,
kid
I think
did.
It was the same injury then,
yeah.
Or at least the same general injury, the same region of the leg.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you stand on no touch, hybrid, or just the standard icing rule?
I've watched enough minors, enough juniors. The other day I was at, I was in Erie, Pennsylvania for an Erie Otters game of the, nice. Ontario Hockey League. Oh yeah. I love the minors. That's the thing. I love going to minor league games. A lot of the minors, and especially the juniors, college, it's no touch icing, and I love it. I think it's fine. One of the things that it does is it speeds up how long until you get the next face off, because pretty much once it's almost guaranteed it's an icing, everybody pretty much stops and they're going to wait it out. The battle for the puck, I understand. Yeah, there's a battle there, but I think that in a year or two, nobody's going to miss that battle one bit.
No, 9 times out of 10, if not more, it's a, it's a procedural thing to touch up. I think if the NHL, I mean, I don't see why they can't just have the courage to go no touch. But if they didn't have, you know, that want to take the chase out of it together, I mean, there's always hybrid icing. The only problem with hybrid icing, or at least the big one that I think of, is, you know, all the referee second guessing is already high enough now. I can't imagine how annoying it's going to be to see on Twitter people complaining about, oh, that should have been a no touch, or all that shouldn't have been a no touch. He had a chance at tracking that puck down. Like, that's going to be, that would be really annoying and obnoxious. Yeah. But, you know, I kind of shocked that the NHL's dragging its feet so much with icing. Cause I mean, you see what happened with Foster. For all the interesting chases of the pucks, I don't think it justifies one career being unnecessarily endangered like that. Yeah. You know, it just, I mean, Curtis Foster had some promise, and, you know, now he's sort of, I mean, maybe he would have been marginal anyway, but now he's a big guy with a hard slap shot that can't really do much else. But you got to hand it to him for even coming back like he did.
Yeah.
That was a scary injury. And yeah, I mean, who loves watching an ice? I mean, it's not an important part of the game. The only thing is, like, since I don't watch juniors as much, you know, I remember watching the World Hockey Championships, and it takes an adjustment to get used to that no touch. Like, your mind prepares for that little chase down, and then you're like, oh yeah, it's going straight back now.
And how long does that adjustment take? I mean, like half a period, twice it happens
at the most.
You know? Yeah. No, so I don't think fans would really miss it. No. I'm kind of a fan of the outdoor lacrosse style. I don't know if you've ever seen how out of bounds works with outdoor lacrosse. Oh. If you take a shot or whatnot and it goes out of bounds, when whoever's closest, whoever basically has their stick closest to the line when it goes out of bounds. So you could have a race for the puck, and whoever, if the offending team is closer, it gets waved off, you know, once it crosses the line. And then if it's if the team that's chasing it down to get the icing call is closer, then they would get the call. So, you know, so it at least it gives you a bit of that race, but the determination has happened already. You know?
Yeah.
And the other problem I have, the only problem I have really with the rules of how they kind of changed it last year, if, you know, you're going to get a penalty if you tangle up with the player. Mm. At that point, what is the point then of having the race? What is the point of having the battle? There's no reason to do it if you're going to penalize somebody for making contact. So
now that makes the forechecker's job incredibly difficult. Mm-hmm. If what if it's a normal hit on the boards? Like, that's okay. You know, it's very, the Shanahan, I think it's a step in the direction of clear decision making. You know, again, the rule changes are a lot more straightforward now.
Right.
Still give the refs a little bit of leeway to decide things, which is good and bad.
I think it's okay to give the refs some discretion. Mm-hmm. I just don't think that anybody has enough faith in the refs versus their own desires for the outcome of something. You know, I love that. I think that refs should have the discretion to be able to say something on the ice that, you know, is a little more severe or a little less severe. If it were just black and white, have computers call it and call it a day. But that's not what happens, and that's okay. I think people have less faith in referees than they really should. And
I agree.
It's just, some of it's homerism, some of it's just thinking that they know better, and some of it's some of it's instant replay has gotten a lot easier to view, and some of it's even color commentators saying, "Oh, that's a horrible call."
Yeah, especially local guys.
Yeah, which is okay. They're more than welcome to. It's just
they're
not going to get it right all the time either.
Yeah, I think refs in sports in general get beat up too much. Maybe the NBA seems a little crooked sometimes. I mean, that could be perception, but you know
they had a ref go to prison. Was it for? You're right. It's a little crooked. That's okay to say, if that's, you know, at least it has been, you know, point
there
shaving.
There have been some suspicious moments. Like, I remember the Sacramento, like a lot of those games, when you see a really, really out there disparity in foul shots, you know, when it's like double one team, then, I mean, even if that team is going to the hoop a lot more, you know, you kind of like, oh boy. I don't think hockey has that as much. I do think home crowds influence refs, especially if they're really rowdy crowds. Actually, you know, one thing I looked at during the off season is since the lockout, which teams receive the most power plays. And I'm not sure if you'd be surprised by this, but Carolina is like far ahead of everyone else as far as getting power play opportunities. I could send you the actual post after we talk, but pretty stunning how, like, I was kind of surprised. I guess Carolina's aggressive style has a lot to do with that. I wonder if maybe their fans have something to do with it, you know?
But I don't know. That's a new one to me. I hadn't known.
Some interesting stuff. I can't remember who's gotten. I think Anaheim's up there, but that's because of the, you know, in Philly, but those are their styles. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it seems like Montreal traditionally doesn't get a lot of chances. I wonder if that's maybe because they're a smaller team, so they're more perimeter. You know, you don't have to grab them as they go through the middle as much. You know, you can speculate a million ways. But, yeah, I'll send you that because it's an interesting thing.
That'd be great. I'd love to see it. Maybe they should pick up Sean Avery off of waivers.
Yeah, no kidding. But, yeah, you know, I think refs get beat up too much, and you know, a lot of people think with their hearts and not with their heads with a lot of those decisions, and underestimate the speed of the game too. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, you can't always fault I think you can almost give players a little leeway for diving sometimes too if they feel like that's the only way an infraction will actually be called. Mm. Obviously, there's a lot of times where it's kind of disgusting to see, but. You know, I mean, sometimes you got to be a little dirty to get your team a power play, you know?
That's true. I saw that. I saw a picture, or what was the video? I think it was Yager and Avery, where Avery just literally jumped off his skates to dive. And it was, it's hilarious.
Avery's had his moments of dives, I think.
Oh, yeah. Lots of, you know what? There probably isn't a player who's never dove in their career. Yeah. Oh, there was a great, when I was in Boston in 2004, they were showing a classic Bruins game, and Ray Bourque, God bless him, he took a dive. He totally took a dive, and he looks up, and he winked, and the camera was right in on his face, and he looks up at somebody, really? Winked, and the announcer said, oh, look at that, he's kind of stunned. I was dying laughing, it was hilarious.
That's awesome. But yeah, I mean, you know, obviously there's certain players that abuse it, like was it LaPierre or LaPerrier? Maxime LaPierre in Vancouver. Yeah. Almost to the point where it's like the boy who cries wolf, you know, like he got legitimately infracted upon, so to speak, mm-hmm. during the finals a couple times, but refs, they swallowed their whistle on him because they're like just so tired of his antics, which I think is hilarious, you know, but not necessarily the right way to call games.
No, not necessarily. Fun. But if you've been burned a couple of times, I kind of think of it as if you look over the entire series, you know, you are your reputation in that series.
Yep.
If you've done some bad things in that series, you're probably going to pay for it at some point. So
yep.
Maybe was it Marchand that was socking one of the Sedins in the face about six times?
Oh, yeah, I think so.
And those gloves are padded, but they ain't that padded. It still sucks to get punched in the face.
Sedins couldn't be used to getting hit in the face too often. No. They play. Yeah.
No, they're all talent, and they have they have a lot of it. But man, that was a rough finals. Rough finals.
I couldn't. You know, I was very high in the Canucks, but they were banged up, and Boston pushed them around. Mm-hmm. That didn't help.
Yep. No, it's
couldn't
true.
Couldn't believe that Vancouver had so much trouble. But, you know, Boston, you know, they've got a lot of versatility. I wouldn't be shocked if they made another deep run. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people are counting them out. They're not sexy, but I really like Bergeron. Krejci led the playoffs in points, and you didn't really get a whole lot of credit for it. Mm-hmm. They're both young, too. So it's like that team's young. They're sort of together. From what I've heard, they're healthy. So they have a shot at repeating.
Oh yeah. If Horton comes back as well as he did. Yeah. Who's actually changed from that team other than that Recchi, and that's it?
Recchi retired, Michael Ryder left for Dallas. And he's You know, Ryder, I think if you employ him the right way, which I think the Bruins mostly did, you know, his hot and cold streaks can be useful. And he had some nice streaks in the playoffs. He actually helped out during Seguin's, you know, his little hot streak. Ryder was pretty hot during that streak, too. And I don't think you can totally discount, you know, having that spark plug every now and then. But I understand why they let him go. And they have a lot of cap space because of it. I think they have somewhere like $6 million, but that was a while ago since I checked. But they also lost, so to speak, Tomas Kaberle, who went to Carolina. And they basically exchanged him for Joe Corvo.
That's addition by subtraction right there, yeah.
He's got warts of his own, but I think he's a better fit for Boston because he's a little more physical, and he's got a right-handed shot, which could be useful on the power play for them. Yeah. If I remember correctly, hopefully I didn't. Some guys get mixed up in my brain as far as right and left shots, but...
That's better than I could do. I couldn't tell you who's a right shot and who's a left shot most of the time. I really couldn't. So
yeah, I could probably attribute that to video games. So don't take it too hard.
Well, I think that's about all the time we have for this week for the rink. I think we covered a lot, but the nice thing is to know that there, in a couple weeks when you and I meet back up again, there's still going to be plenty more.
Sure. Yeah, we definitely have to dive into fighting.
Oh yeah, I'd like to talk about that a bunch. The puck drops tonight as we record this. You're saying LA Kings and Washington Capitals, with the Capitals taking it all.
Yeah, the Capitals.
And last year I was on the Face Off Hockey Show, and I said Thrashers just off the top of my head because I thought it would be funny, and I think I'm going to say the same thing again this year: the Thrashers,
the Winnipeg Jets.
No, I'm saying Thrashers because I can't predict anything to save my life. Nice. All I can really say is I think that the Flyers and the Sharks are going to go pretty deep, and that's about all I can really say.
I like both
say.
Teams. I like the Sharks a lot. Not sold on the Emmy.
We're just going to have to see, I guess.
It's going to be a lot of fun. And I'm very excited for this season. I think you are too. So.
Yeah. Oh, I have not been this psyched about a season in a couple of years. The last couple of off seasons after, when they were coming to the end of the off season, and it's like, is it really time already? And this year I'm geared up. I am ready for some hockey.
Kind of stunning that it's tonight. You know, like there's so many big stories in the off season, and a lot of them negative, obviously, but just like so much going on, you know, that, you know, it's like, wow, hockey's back already. Awesome. You know,
absolutely. James, thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Glad to be on. Can't wait for next time.
Oh, absolutely. James O'Brien writes for Pro Hockey Talk, NBC's Pro Hockey Talk, formerly on Cycle Like the Sedins. You may remember that long-running blog. He is on Twitter at Cycle Like Sedins. You can find him in all those places. And every so often here on The Rink, new co-host, and I'm really, really happy to have you on board. Thanks a lot for doing it.
Thanks again.
Thanks a lot for listening to The Rink. This was episode 67. You can always find The Rink at www.rinkpodcast.com, where you can find out how to subscribe in iTunes, leave a comment, links to anything that you heard here. You can call The Rink at 845-704-RINK. That's 845-704-7465. Starting October 10th, I'm driving from Buffalo to Denver, and there's a map on the website, rinkpodcast.com. If you're in the path of Hurricane James, well, I'd love to talk to you, talk some hockey for the podcast. Just hit me up either on Twitter or at the contact form that's on the Rink Podcast site, rinkpodcast.com. Thanks a lot for listening to The Rink.